I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, in your packet is the meeting minutes for February 16th. And Representative Detmer, you want to move those minutes?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
Representative Detmer moves the minutes from February 16th, 2017. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members, we've got a couple of bills that we're going to do today. We're going to start off with House File 399. That's the severance package bill. That's my bill that I'm authoring. And just to kind of walk you through what this does, we should probably first attach my amendment as well. So I've got the A2 amendment. And just briefly, what this does is it makes sure that employees, we tried to get at the issue of political appointees and severance pay. This tightens up the language so that if you're a political appointee, that is a commissioner, a deputy commissioner, or assistant commissioner, you would not be eligible for a severance package, and that's what the A2 amendment does. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, members' questions to the A2 amendment. All right, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. So just kind of walk through, members, why we are doing this piece of legislation. If you remember back in September, it was reported that the governor had put out three different severance packages political appointees of his. I think two of them were commissioners, and then the third one was I forget what her position was. But in total, it was close to, I think, $90,000 that were paid out in severance packages without the knowledge of the legislature. It was kind of found out by accident. And I think most people would agree that it's not the intent of having severance packages paid out to political appointees, especially when we all know these are temporary positions that are at the discretion of the governor as he serves in office. And so this language makes sure that it's clear. There was a disagreement over how the language was interpreted, and so this makes it clear that that's not the intent. We had in one case an individual had only worked for the administration for 8 months and received a severance package of $18,000. So that fixes this problem to make sure that it doesn't happen in the future and just puts that in statute and make sure that there's no question about the interpretation of the law. So with that, I'm going to first go to the audience, see if there's anyone that wishes to testify to House File 399 on the severance package bill. Okay. Members, to your questions on the bill. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very appreciative of you bringing this forward. Has there ever been any other branch of government where somebody who resigns is given a severance package for their resignation?
Representative Nash, so if they resign from the position and in state government, I couldn't tell you for sure. I don't know if Mr. Gary knows for sure. I couldn't tell you for certain. So.
Yeah, great bill. And, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to request a roll call.
Representative Nash requests a roll call on House File 399 as amended. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this tie into the Minnesota managerial plan that's currently in effect? Or can you say a little bit about that? Is that what your intent is? I understand that that's similar in terms of its approach with severance packages. That's my question.
Okay. Representative Johnson, with the amendment, it changes how we do this. And, Mr. Gehring, I don't know if you want to offer any more insight on with the amended language, how it changes it, if that because as it was originally, it would have tied into the managerial plan, but now this changes it slightly. So, Mr. Gehring, any additional information that you want to provide?
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, so what the bill is doing is not specifically authorizing severance packages, but sort of setting a cap on how much the severance can be if it's authorized in a plan such as the managerial plan. With the A2 amendment, Most of the employees that would be included in the managerial plan, the commissioners, deputy commissioners, and assistant commissioners are prohibited from receiving severance. But if there are other employees in the managerial plan that don't qualify under one of those titles, then they might still be authorized to receive severance, but only up to the limits that are provided in the bill. So the bill caps the amount at the lesser of either 6 months of pay or 35% of the accumulated sick leave. And the current managerial plan sets the cap right now at 35% of unused sick leave.
Representative Johnson?
No, that explains it. Thank you.
Okay. Members, any other questions to the bill? Okay. On the roll call, if the clerk will take the roll. Oh, and I should state, actually, this is going to be referred to the floor. So I don't think I said that in my original motion. So House File 399, as amended, to the House floor.
Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Detmer?
Aye.
Representative Fenton?
Aye.
Representative Flanagan? Representative Green?
Aye.
Representative Kunish-Podein?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll? Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Olmar?
Aye.
Representative Pugh?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Representative Uglum?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
He's awesome.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
On a vote of 15 to 2, the bill moves forward to the General Register. Members, in your packets, 15 in favor, and then we just had 2 absent. That's where the 2 number. So, so apologize. Okay, so folks, we've got in your packets House File 314. This is a bill that I'm authoring on redistricting principles. And in this bill, you will see that we have an amendment, the A2 amendment. Representative Johnson, we're going to hold off on doing your A2 amendment. First, we're just going to present the bill, and then we'll get to that at the end. Okay. On this bill, House File 314 establishes redistricting principles. There's 2 components of it. One is establishing the redistricting principles for us to use at the legislature in putting together redistricting plans. And these principles are based off of what we've done historically in the past, but I think I'm going to draw out one exception to that, and that is with the deviation. And in the past, the deviation has been plus or minus 1% in the 2012 redistricting plan. And I think plus or minus 1% on the population ideal. And in my bill, it tightens that up. We want to make sure that it's 0.5% plus or minus. And we do this for a couple of reasons. One, the technology has become more advanced. That gives us a greater opportunity to have a tighter deviation than what we've ever had historically. And then, two, it just makes sure that our districts, as much as they can be, are similar in size. And so that's the piece on that. But the rest is pretty much in with what we have done traditionally when it comes to the principles overall. The other piece of this also is it states that the legislature continues to have the responsibility of putting together the redistricting plans rather than having a commission perform this duty. And a big reason that I've done this is looking at states that have provided commissions. It doesn't provide for any less partisan or nonpartisan process at all. And I can get into that later after we hear from testimony from folks. But after analyzing states like California and states like Arizona, this you don't see a greater elimination of that. As well, the other issue, too, that we have on the redistricting process is it's important that we are holding ourselves accountable, and the legislature can be voted in or voted out. whereas any commission, it'd be much like we've got on the Met Council, we don't have any control or say over the Met Council and who serves on it. They're an unelected body. But when you have an elected body that's part of this process, it helps us in making sure that there's accountability in the redistricting process. So with that, I know that we have a host of folks that wish to testify. So the first person on the list that I'm going to call up is George Beck from the Minnesota Citizens for Clean Election. If you can come to the testifier table. After him is going to be Anastasia Belladonna Carrera and then Nick Harper. So if you can get yourselves lined up so we can get through, that would be helpful. Mr. Beck, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. George Beck, and I'm chair of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections.
And, Mr. Beck, I am going to ask that you keep your comments concise because we do have a long list of folks to testify today, and we still have another bill after this bill. So I'm going to try and keep this to about probably 12 minutes total. So if you can keep that in mind, the more time that you consume, the less time people after you have to testify. So,
that's
Mr. Beck.
This bill, 314, maintains the existing process of redistricting. But what we need is change. Legislators have an inherent conflict of interest in setting legislative and congressional boundaries. It's too much to expect legislators to draw boundaries that might adversely affect their reelection or disadvantage their political party. Simply put, legislators should not be able to pick their constituents. It's like a judge deciding a case in which the judge is also a party. The result of creating safe districts is that many voters are essentially disenfranchised, and those elected have little incentive to compromise. The result is legislative gridlock and less incentive to listen to constituents' opinions. I think Minnesota citizens are tired of the gridlock of the last few years, and competitive districts will attract qualified challengers and increase voter turnout with a resulting benefit to democracy. Redistricting is extremely important. It's one of the building blocks of a democracy, and it's hard to overemphasize the importance of avoiding gerrymandering. California and Arizona have adopted commissions similar to that that's been proposed here in Minnesota, and California has now one of the most competitive districts in the country. The legislature asked voters to vote on whether or not legislative salaries should be set by a commission. And the reason for that was the conflict of interest that was perceived in the legislature doing it itself. This question is at least as important, and I think the voters would clearly approve a redistricting commission if given the opportunity. That's what happens in other states when the proposal has been on the ballot. So I urge you to vote against House File 314 or propose a constitutional amendment and let the people decide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Ms. Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. Ms. Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. Ms. Anastasia Belladonna Carrera. Okay. Mr. Harper. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Nick Harper. I represent the League of Women Voters of Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify here today. Along with protecting the right to vote for all citizens, the League of Women Voters Minnesota believes in an open governmental system that is representative, accountable, and responsive. Most importantly, the League does not support or oppose any particular political party or candidate. The League of Women Voters Minnesota opposes creating a new statutory provision prohibiting the legislature from creating an independent commission composed of non-legislators. As you know, the legislature is not open to subject to open meeting laws and information laws, and thus this provision could result in the redistricting process being done with limited public knowledge or input. The new statutory provision in House File 314 is an extreme impediment to any type of redistricting reform in Minnesota. This history tells us that the legislature The history tells us that our redistricting process for the legislature needs to be reformed. Otherwise, we face costly and time-consuming process repeating what has happened before. Indeed, the increasingly deep partisan divisions in our state and country should compel us to seek an approach to redistricting that will restore the public's trust and confidence in government. House File 314 would not allow the legislature to even consider redistricting methods used successfully by other states such as Iowa. It would not allow the legislature to consider the five-judge model proposed in 2008 by former Governor Arne Carlson or former Vice President Walter Mondale, which is a model that has not been tried in other states. Both methods are nonpartisan and will eliminate the inherent conflict of interest when legislatures are allowed to select their own voters. The League of Women Voters Minnesota asks the members to oppose 314 as currently written and support the amendment offered today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. I'm going to have you stick around because I know that members will have questions, and we'll take the questions after everybody has provided their input. Or did you have a question other than Mr. Harper? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a concern. I know that you said apparently 12 minutes for the people in the audience to testify regarding it. I think that might be a little short given the interest in the bill, and I would hope that you would consider giving the public here the opportunity to voice concerns that they have rather than stifling their opportunity to speak their minds on this important piece of legislation. It truly goes at the fabric of our democracy. So, again, I hope you consider allowing the folks in the audience to have their say.
Oh, Representative Johnson, certainly after we go through the list that we have, I'll open it up to anybody else that wishes to speak. But we also have a responsibility to meet the deadline that we have. Our committee ends at 2:45. And we also have another bill on the agenda, and so we'll try to get through everybody as much as possible. But I also ask that the testifiers that come before everyone else, that you keep in mind that there may be others that wish to testify on this bill, and the more time that you consume, the less opportunity for others to be able to testify. Now, I know this bill was heard in Representative O'Driscoll's committee. I think you had set the time. Well, we didn't have to set the time, but I know you had a piece of legislation prior to that. You had set the time at 30 minutes. We will try and accommodate everybody else, but I also know that members will have questions as well, so we need to kind of manage it within. And that's why we only have three bills that are part of today's committee hearing as well, to make sure that we can get them all in a timely fashion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that and the importance of time management. I and others have chaired committees as well, but I also know that in this committee and in past committee hearings, we've gone past 2:45 on other issues where you felt it was important, and I know our side agreed and went along. So on an issue like this, again, that's so important to so many people, that really hits at the foundation of our democratic process. If it takes us past 2:45, I'm quite confident that the members on our side of the aisle would be more than willing to stay around and hear what citizens of this state have to say about this particular piece of legislation.
Sure, and Representative Johnson, if need be, we go beyond the 2:45 time. We do need to vacate the room, but we can come back to probably 8 o'clock is the next available time that I would have. So we can come back and continue to hear the committee, any testimony that anybody wants to do. But we would have to recess then until 8 p.m. tonight and continue the testimony at that point. So I'm happy to do that as well, Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that really is the key, is people want to be able to speak their minds, and I don't think we should stifle that opportunity.
Sure. You bet. Wonderful. Okay. We've got Mr. Tim Wachlowski. Hopefully I said that correctly. Yeah. Great. Come to the table. And if you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Hello. My name is Tim Wachlowski. I'm a citizen of Minnesota, and I live in Minneapolis. Most people will say they're very busy. Some of us, if we're being honest, might confess to being lazy. In either case, few of us spend a good part of our day digging deep into the details of policy. Instead, we rely on the wisdom and prudence of our elected representatives. Yet, there's a tension here, because polls regularly suggest we take a dim view of our legislators. Some think they're self-serving and in the pockets of special interests. Others think they're fools. How can we reconcile our trust and our distaste and square the circle? How can we sustain the bonds between the representative and the represented? Not easily. Some of the burden falls on our shoulders. We as citizens probably need to do a better job at appreciating the conflicting interests and complexities inherent in legislating. We need to recognize that representing us is a tough job. Yet, much more of the burden, I think, sits squarely on your shoulders. Legislators should work hard to maintain our trust and demonstrate that, like Caesar's wife, you're above suspicion. Reasserting your right to draw your own districts opens you up to doubt and suspicion and continues to condemn the state to hundreds of thousands in legal costs and months or even years of uncertainty regarding our districts. Like setting your own pay, having a hand in moving a district's boundary erodes our faith in the legislature and makes it easy for us to casually dismiss your motives in this and every other area touched by legislation. But legislators and legislatures are not static, inert things, unchanging and immutable. With each decision and choice, speech and vote, legislators reconstitute themselves and their elective body. Each day, you can confirm citizens' quick, cynical suspicions, or day after day, you can work to defy it, modeling to each other, Minnesota, and the rest of the country wise and prudent lawmaking. Please vote against H.R. 314 and take the advice of organizations like Common Cause Minnesota that are advocating for an across-the-aisle hybrid, perhaps, of Bills 314 and 246 that would reduce the partisan gerrymandering risk and potentially save the state hundreds and thousands of dollars. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wachowski. I should have explained earlier, too. As a courtesy of decorum at the legislature, we don't do applause, we don't do it on the House floor, and we don't do it here in committee as well. If you fail to follow that as part of the decorum that we have here, I will ask for our House security to ask you to leave the room. Do you understand? Great. Thank you. Ms. Suzanne Peterson, and then after her, I've got Carolyn Dobler. If you're wishing to testify, too, I ask that you give a note to our page, if the page can wave. And then Mr. Holquist will get your name on the list. We have already added Laura Zumbrennan, and Jim Herrick, and Peter Watson. So, Ms. Suzanne Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Peterson. I hail from Rochester. I'm not with a particular organization or nonprofit. I'm with a group of activists from all across the state of Minnesota. We came here today with less than a 24-hour notice. We are here because we are concerned about this bill. To us, frankly, this bill is unbelievable. On its face, it appears to be unfair, unreasonable, perhaps even unconstitutional, perhaps even unethical. Strong language, yes, but this is how it strikes us. We ask this question, what's the purpose of this bill? It appears that the purpose of this bill is to put the legislators in charge of redistricting. We ask the question, why? No matter which side of the aisle that you're on, why is this thought to be fair and reasonable? There is an inherent conflict of interest in allowing legislators to draw or redraw district lines. Surely we know this. From our read of it, it looks to possibly allow legislators to choose their voters, not the other way around. That's not the way it works. We, the people, are supposed to be able to choose our representation, our legislators. To us, this sounds like it's potential for voter suppression. Think of it from our perspective. We're just average citizens We're not connected to any particular organization. At its best, what we hope for is complete neutrality and that the party in charge won't be tempted to be unfair. But from what we've read that is occurring all across the country, it's not working out that way. It's shown itself to be the worst. It's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house. It takes away our voice. We ask that you not stifle our voices. We ask that a legislator accept to win or lose his or her district according to the voice of the people and not according to some built-in unfair advantage. We all learned in kindergarten, share, take your turn, don't take anybody else's stuff. Let those long-ago learned principles remain in place. Let's not try and figure out ways to usurp a citizen's vote. That's not what Minnesota is about. This election has had a profound effect on the citizens of this country, and Minnesota is no different. We are woke. We lift our voices to be heard. We will not be denied. We will be here tomorrow, next month, next year, and the year after. We, the people, ask that you put the people first. We ask that our voices be heard organically and that you do not endeavor to stifle them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Ms. Carolyn Dobler. After that, it's Ms. Lori Parker. If you can please come to the front, that would be helpful. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Dobler, state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Carolyn Dobler. I'm a resident of St. Peter.
Well, Ms. Dobler, before you actually start, too, I just want to clarify for the audience. This bill was posted last Thursday, February 16th. I know the last person had said that she just had received 24-hour notice. But this was posted last Thursday, as required by our House rules. So, Ms. Stobler, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, respected committee members. I am a professor emerita of statistics at Gustavus Adolphus College. I am here today to express my strong disapproval of HF 314, in particular Section 1, Subdivision 1B, which proposes legislative districts to be drawn by a commission of only legislators. This method of redistricting is clearly not in the best interest of the people, but rather in the self-interest of the legislators. I would like to address the potential consequences of employing this method on the erosion of democracy. First, competition in legislative races may be diminished. In published, peer-reviewed studies, researchers have repeatedly concluded that legislatively drawn districts reduce competition. The primary consequence of reduced competition is reduced voter turnout. We in Minnesota are proud of our high voter turnout. Are you, our representatives, willing to accept responsibility for a decrease in competition in legislative races and a decline in voter participation? Second, there is a strong possibility that the state will face legal challenges by using this method. Wisconsin has been ordered to submit a new redistricting plan, as has North Carolina. Cases involving Alabama and Virginia are currently in the appeals process. Each of these states draw districts using legislators. Is the state of Minnesota prepared to expend considerable time, resources, and funding on potential legal costs? Finally, consider the trust the people have placed in you, our representatives. Enacting a bill that inherently encourages partisanship, bias, and conflict of interest erodes the very trust that is necessary for democracy to prevail. Historical Gallup polls consistently show that the legislative branch has the least trust of these three branches. Are you, our representatives, willing to diminish the trust between the people and the government by enacting this bill? Thus, I categorically oppose Section 1, Subdivision 1B of HF 314 as an assault on democracy in that it does not act in the best interest of the people. Legislator-drawn redistricting is fraught with detrimental consequences. Please consider replacing this provision with the establishment of an independent commission composed of knowledgeable, nonpartisan individuals similar to that proposed in HF 246. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dobler. Ms. Lori Parker, and then after that, Gary Fitzfield. for Fifield. Ms. Lori Parker. Ms. Lori Parker. Ms. Lori Parker. Is it Mr. Fifield? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Gary Fifield. I live in St. Paul. I'm not here representing any organization. I'm here today because I want to express to you my personal need to believe in the fairness of my government. Obsessed is not too strong a word to describe how I feel about the process we use to choose our representatives in government, the rules that are created to determine how and where we vote. At this time, as you know, trust in government is very low. This is true in part because many elections are over before they begin, in significant part because of the redistricting process. You have probably seen that terribly contorted districts in other states drawn to gain advantage for one party over another. I do not wish to see Minnesota's map look like those. Help reestablish confidence in our government. Keep politics out of the redistricting process to the extent humanly possible. This has been done in Iowa, where a nonpartisan agency is responsible for drawing the lines. It has been very successful and supported by all political parties. The system is designed to not favor one political party over another. Now you are considering a bill which unfortunately guarantees that politics will govern the redistricting process. It forbids a nonpartisan commission similar to the system in Iowa, despite the obvious fact that legislators have an inherent conflict of interest in the redistricting process. There is, as you know, a second bill which would establish such a nonpartisan commission for drawing district boundaries. It obviously did not make it as far as this committee. I implore you to take this opportunity to win back some of the lost confidence in our government, give our citizens a process that is transparent, that they can trust without question. Take the partisanship out of the redistricting process. Make it fair for everyone, and let the people elect the representatives who they feel will best serve them, not the representatives who have been given the inherent advantage of a politically crafted district boundary. Vote against this bill and resurrect the bill which would establish a nonpartisan commission. I wish you well in your deliberations. Do your best for all of us. Thank you.
Ms. Laura Zumbrennan and Jim Herrick. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is Laura Zumbrennan. I'm an engineer and entrepreneur in Rochester and represent myself and family members and friends throughout the state. It is a well-established fact that gerrymandering deliberately distorts the electorate in a way that makes some votes count more than others. This practice is wrong and needs to be stopped. Gerrymandering has been practiced by both parties. It's clear the inherent conflict of interest that exists between creating the districts and representing the districts is only getting worse. Party affiliation can now matter more than our democracy. It's imperative for our democracy that we do everything we can to stop gerrymandering. This bill, by blocking an independent commission from creating congressional districts, does exactly the opposite. Please do not allow this to go any further. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Herrick. And after him, I have Hunter Cantrell. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Herrick. I'm Lauderdale, and I represent, membership-wise, at least three groups: Common Cause, Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections, and Move to Amend, all nonprofit nonpartisan organizations. I'm always pleased to receive messages from my representatives about some of the work that they've done in the legislature. I have never received, and don't expect I ever will receive, a message about how proud a representative is of helping to gerrymander Minnesota. Not likely. They might go on to say, I'm so proud of this because now I will be selecting you voters instead of you voters selecting me. Madam Chairman has referred to the responsibility, or rather the accountability of the legislature for this redistricting, and I appreciate that, but at the same time, there is no accountability once the fix is in. It's too late to do anything about it. The accountability is here today. This needs to be defeated. It's a black eye for the state of Minnesota. You know it's wrong, or it would be better publicized. And this is an opportunity to get rid of it today. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herrick. I've got Mr. Cantrell and then Stephen Petrin. If you can come to the front. Thank you. Are you Mr. Cantrell?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Hunter Cantrell. I represent myself, and I am from the proud town of Savage, Minnesota. So I'm here today to offer my strong condemnation of this bill. Gerrymandering is perhaps, without being hyperbolic, one of the greatest threats against our republic and against our democratic processes. And it seems as though increasingly, especially since 2010, we have seen a gross increase in expansion of the amount of influence that gerrymandering has both in our elections and to the extent at which gerrymandering is used to shape elections. I forget her name, but the professor from Gustavus Adolphus College mentioned North Carolina, citing Sam Wang's 2013 New York Times article called The Great Gerrymander. In North Carolina, after the 2010 redistricting, and in the 2012 elections, the total House votes for Congress was 51% Democrat and 49% Republican. In simulations of congressional delegations relying on a model in which districts were drawn fairly, the average congressional district, or the average congressional delegation, was split with 7 Democrats and 6 Republican members going to the House of Representatives. However, due to gerrymandering, because the state legislature had the authority to redraw legislative districts and congressional districts, the final delegation ended up being 4 Democrats and 9 Republicans. I don't think that this legislature is trustworthy enough to gain the support of the people in terms of drawing legislative districts on their own. There is a quite awe-inspiring amount of lack of trust that people have in their government across the country, but also in Minnesota. So I propose that instead of supporting this bill, HF 314, that instead we try to move towards solutions such as those proposed in HF 246, authored by Schultz et al. And that's all I have to say about that. Thank you for your time, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Mr. Stephen Petrin, and then after that, Jenica Cruz. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Hi, my name is Steve Petrin. I live in St. Paul, electrician. And I agree that I think that, you know, having legislatures draw their own lines for districting, I think that's irresponsible. And I would think that you'd come up with a separate committee. I don't know if you want to take, like, the parties, the different political parties, and say, hey, what do you guys think of this? And then have them come up with something. And then also then not only let them agree on it, but then ask the people in a vote or something like that, say, hey, this is what we think is fair. Both political parties agree with this. What do you guys think? Which is us. And then we'll say, yeah or no. But otherwise, I think that redistricting while you're in charge is irresponsible and could make things so that you can get yourself reelected over and over and over again. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Jenica Cruz and then Susan Erickson. And again, I just before you start, I apologize. If you are wishing to testify in committee, the House page, if you can wave your hand again, is right there if you can provide her your name so we have you on the list. Ms. Cruz, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and for the record and who you represent.
My name is Jenica Cruz. I live in Minneapolis, and I represent a group of friends who are also spreading themselves thin to try and go to everything that we feel is very important right now. And I'd just like to state that I can't believe we are discussing codifying a prohibition against establishing a nonpartisan committee and process for redistricting and drawing lines around where people live, what concerns they might have. Gerrymandering just doesn't have a place in Minnesota, in my view. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. And Ms. Susan Erickson. And then after that, Jim Shope. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you very much. My name is Susan Erickson, and I am a citizen of Minnesota and a resident of St. Louis Park. And as a citizen, I'm your boss. And I mean that in a very sincere way. And I think one of the very important jobs that a boss, just like a parent, has is to is to ensure that one's employees can thrive and can meet the expectations of a job, of an office, and to do that in various ways. One is to make the ideals that you are attempting to meet very clear, and I think our Constitution does that, and I think the history of our fine, outstanding, progressive state does that. But I also think you also set up parameters and a methodology so that a person can fulfill that. And as the old expression goes, trust but verify. And we do have tremendous trust and need to trust our elected officials. And you need to be trustworthy in the deepest possible sense. And just as we spend every day as parents and citizens and employees and members of our communities trying to build a fabric of community and trustworthiness and honesty and enlightenment, we demand that from you as well, because you are citizens of this same body politic that we're all participating in. And if the most elemental thing, such as trusting that our vote and our opinions and our aspirations as a people are going to be thwarted from the outset by a discriminatory policy, that by this kind of sort of self-serving gerrymandering, you're going against not only your best interests, but ours. And then it's that old expression, you know, we're only as great as the least of us. And we need you to lift us all up. So I ask, please, use your best judgment. Model for us. Lead us with your very best. And please vote against this bill, H.R. 314, and instead set up an independent commission that will protect and encourage and allow us all to thrive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Mr. Shope, Jim Shope. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Hi, my name is Jim Shope. I'm from St. Louis Park. I've never done anything like this before, so I'm pretty nervous. First of all, is it possible for me to ask a question?
We're just asking for your testimony, Mr. Shope. Okay. If you have a question, you can submit it to us via email.
Okay. I want to just say that I'm opposed to Section 1, Subdivision 1B of this bill. I think we should leave the door open to establishing a nonpartisan commission. I think that would be less partisan. I don't see any reason to close that door. Why not just get rid of that subdivision 1B? Also, I just wanted to point out, I'm not an expert at reading the Minnesota Constitution, but that subdivision B or subdivision 1B states that it's consistent with the requirements of the Minnesota Constitution. Article 4, Section 3, I don't know if you guys read that, you probably have, but I'm just going to read Article 4, Section 3 really quickly. It says, each house shall be the judge of the election returns and eligibility of its own members. A majority of each shall constitute a quorum and transact business, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and such penalties as it may provide. So I don't really see how I see that's very loosely related to this, to that, to this bill, but I really don't think that we should say that this is consistent with the requirements of the Minnesota Constitution, Article 4, Section 3. It just seems very loosely related. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shope. And just to help you out a little bit on that, if you look at Article 4, Section 3 of the Minnesota Constitution, it says census enumeration, apportionment, congressional and legislative district boundaries, and Senate districts. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask staff to provide you with this book so you can review it, because I think you were looking at the wrong.
Oh, I must have been. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you, Mr. Shope. I've got Mr. Watson, Peter Watson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Watson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Peter Watson, W-A-T-T-S-O-N. I'm a resident
of... Mr. Watson, I should probably, for the members that don't know you, I should let them all know that Mr. Watson had served as Senate counsel at one point and was responsible for redistricting on many different occasions throughout the years. So, Mr. Watson, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I have served as Senate counsel for 40 years for the Minnesota Senate, and my first redistricting was 1971, and so this is my fifth round of redistricting, and we're all looking forward to what would be my sixth round of redistricting. Shorewood, by the way, is not Shoreview where the TV towers are. It's Shorewood on Lake Minnetonka, as Representative Hughes' district on the western side. The reason I am here as a private citizen testifying on behalf of myself is to attempt to expiate my guilt over the numbering of districts in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. You know that the districts in Hennepin and Ramsey are not numbered consecutively. There are 30s and 40s and 60s and 50s in Hennepin County and 30s and 40s and 60s in Ramsey County. And you wonder, why is that? Why would anybody do that? I'm here to give you a little history. From I'm not sure when it started, but at least from 1897 up until 1970, the districts were numbered in a regular series as the Constitution requires, starting from the southeast corner and going up to northwest. As they moved through the metropolitan area, Hennepin and Ramsey each had a certain number of Senate districts that were numbered consecutively within those counties and then moved on north. The legislature omitted to do its duty of redistricting between 1913 and 1959. They failed to redistrict in the 1960s for a while, until 1966, and in the 1970s, they just got totally deadlocked. So for the first time, the federal court had to step in and redraw new legislative districts. And in the process of doing that, they worked with maps that had been provided by the Highway Department and by, in the metropolitan area, the Metropolitan Council, which had great maps of the seven-county metropolitan area and more detailed maps of the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. And I don't know for sure, but I think it was because of that particular availability of maps if the court decided that instead of using the old system, they would bypass the metropolitan area and then come back into the metro area and work around the outside where they could use those big maps of the whole metro area, and then finally work on the more detailed maps in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the inner ring suburbs. I think that's why they worked that way, and that's why they numbered them that way. In the 1980s, 1982, the legislature again failed to do its job, and the federal courts came in and drew plans, and they used the same system that had been used in 1972. 1991, the legislature did get its act together and was able to pass redistricting plans, and they were also preparing to do that by adopting standards for redistricting plans. There were concurrent resolutions passed by the Senate and the House that set the standards, including a numbering scheme. How did that numbering scheme get in there? When the four caucuses were drawing their plans, I noticed that not only was there a different numbering scheme used by each caucus, but within the caucus, the different people who were drawing plans, different members would have different, they used different numbering schemes. There was no rhyme nor reason. So I thought it would be a good idea if we were to put somewhere, and let's try this concurrent resolution on standards, the method for numbering the districts. And lacking anything better, I said, well, let's just use the existing system, which was fine. The federal court, the state court, which then redo plans in 2001 and 2011, used that same numbering scheme. Just no problem that they saw, I suppose. But the problem that I have seen with it is that when you're trying to compare plans and the statistics on a plan, you see a printout. And so the districts are in numerical order. And so you see the statistics by number. And in the metro area, you have no idea where District 38 might be and District 50 might be and District 60 and so forth, because they're scattered all around. So I offer for your consideration the thought, take a look at page 2 on lines 6 and 7, where it's got that numbering scheme, essentially what I had written in 91, except in 2010 they changed it from 7 county to 11 county. And just delete outside at the end of line 6 and delete all of line 7 and put in a period and then add a sentence that would say, in a county that includes more than one whole Senate districts, the districts must be numbered consecutively. So the districts in Hennepin County don't have to wait for Minneapolis. They can be numbered all in order within Hennepin County. And the districts in St. Paul don't have to have the suburban Ramsey County numbered as being outside St. Paul before they get to Minneapolis. And you can have a nice, neat numbering scheme where you'll be able to tell a little bit from the district numbers where the darn district is. So that is my thought. And I actually have a language for an amendment and a handout that you can have. I don't expect you to take action on it now, but it wouldn't be redistricting if we didn't have maps.
If the pages can distribute those, please.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Watson.
Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And we've got Mr. Hughes and then Delta Larkey. And then after that, I don't have anyone else on the list. So if you are wishing to provide testimony, please seek out our page here. Otherwise, we will be done after Delta Larkey. Mr. Hughes.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record
Mark
and who you represent.
Hughes from Shoreview, not sure what Shoreview.
Oh, funny.
Chair Anderson, committee members, thank you for this time. I'm not quite as well versed as Mr. Watson, but I'll give it a go here. I would be against H.R. 314 because it would sound then that, not that we're all adults, we can't pick and choose what, you know, sections we want to serve. That's true, we could do that. But I think we need the committee to show more of a fairness in what is chosen and what is work that's dealt out. So if anybody would take that under consideration, that's all I have this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. And the last person I have on the list is Delta Larkey. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Delta Larkey. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I'm new to the world of politics, as I know has happened for a lot of people after the recent elections. People have become more involved. I've also become quite cynical. I'm actually quite doubtful that us sitting here telling you how we feel is going to change your minds at all. I'm a therapist, a mental health therapist, so I'm well-versed in human psychology and how that works. And I am quite sure that people have already made up their minds, have already decided to probably vote along their party lines. So what I want to tell you is more that, I don't want to say warning because I don't want to get in trouble, but there are thousands of us across the state of Minnesota that have become mobilized and have become angry. And we are well-resourced and we are knowledgeable and we are more and more involved on what is happening in the state and in the nation. And we're watching you. We're watching your votes. We're watching the bills that you author. And we will do everything in our power to make sure that our views and our voices are heard. And that will include traveling across the state, making sure that if you don't vote in the interests of the people of Minnesota, that you won't be elected again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larkey. Perhaps you weren't here earlier. As I mentioned, there is a level of decorum that we keep at the legislature, and that includes providing an environment that makes everyone feel comfortable, and the clapping is out of order. If you persist in clapping, I will ask House Security to have you removed from the room. So, folks, we have got Representative Johnson. Do you want to do your amendment now? Do you want to do your amendment now?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Thanks for not removing these folks from the audience. It's appreciated. The A2 amendment, what that does is addresses that subdivision 1B that's been talked about and that we've heard compelling testimony about. It eliminates the language in the House file that rules out or prohibits the legislature from delegating its redistricting authority to any entity that's not comprised entirely of legislators. And then Chair, I want to make sure we get a roll call on this as well.
Johnson requests a roll call.
As well as the bill.
Okay.
The testimony you heard has certainly made clear that the legislature isn't viewed as sufficiently objective to do this kind of work. And, and that's really foundational trust issues for our democracy, I think. There's going to be some maps passed out, I think, that Jim, the researcher, has that shows some of the effects of redistricting you can take a look at, and you're probably familiar with already. But as you already know, the three of the last four redistricting efforts in Minnesota, the courts have had to step in and redraw the boundaries due to the failure of the legislature to come up with a plan. And it would have been four out of four if Governor Carlson hadn't screwed up with the veto back in 1991. Frankly, I support more the legislation, House File 246, that would have created a commission of retired judges to draw the legislative and congressional boundaries, and I think it was heard in Chair Driscoll's committee, and hopefully it still has some life and will come back for us to take a look at it. That would be my preference, is that legislation. However, I'm going to offer this A2, Madam Chair, as a compromise. It doesn't mandate an independent commission to your bill. but also does not rule out such an objective, such a plan as your bill does, and which I think is a huge mistake. So in the spirit of compromise, Madam Chair, I offer the A2 amendment so that we don't say that only legislators can draw the lines for these boundaries. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there anyone wishing to testify to the A2 amendment that has not testified at this point? Members, questions for Representative Johnson? Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm a little bit confused, I guess, from the standpoint of some of the testimony and some of the details here. Madam Chair, I'm wondering if the principles that are outlined in the bill shouldn't be discussed a little bit and read for everybody. You know, we see these gerrymandering maps and everything else, and the principles that are drafted in the bill are specifically designed not to have that happen. Would that be possible for someone to read those?
Sure. Mr. Gehring, you want to go through the principles, if you will, in the bill?
Madam Chair, we are on the A2 amendments. I'm not sure it's relevant.
Well, I think it probably helps for members. So, Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, members, so I'll walk through the principles that are listed in House File 314 as you have them in front of you. So what this bill is effectively doing is, in Subdivision 1, as has already been discussed, provides that the principles that we list here are applicable to both legislative and congressional district boundaries. Then Subdivision 1, Paragraph B, provides that it's the duty of the legislature to draw those actual boundaries. And then starting with Subdivision 2 through the end, there are specific principles that are used when the actual lines are being drawn. So Subdivision 2 requires that House districts nest within a Senate district. So this means that you have one Senate district that's split into two House districts. That's called nesting. Subdivision 3 is the equal population requirement. So there's the standard of 0.5% deviation plus or minus in population for legislative districts. This is the substantially equal standard for population for state legislative districts. And then for congressional districts, the requirement is that the districts must be nearly equal in population as practicable. Subdivision 4 is what's referred to as contiguity and compactness. This principle means that districts must be created in a way that is sort of convenient and contiguous is the term that's used in the bill. There's a mathematical formula used to determine compactness, and so when district plans are analyzed, we use those numbers in the committee process to see whether a district is compact or not. Page 2, Subdivision 5, the numbering principle. This is the principle that Mr. Watson already discussed that describes how the districts are numbered. So legislative districts in Minnesota are numbered starting in the northwest corner of the state and then proceeding across from west to east and then north to south, with the exception for the metropolitan area. And then congressional districts are sort of the opposite. So congressional districts are numbered starting with District 1 in the southeast corner of the state and then moving up to the north northeast. Subdivision 6 is a principle that's required to be used that relates to minority representation in districts. This principle says specifically that the dilution of racial or ethnic minority voting strength is contrary to the laws of the United States and the state of Minnesota, and that the principles must not be construed to supersede any provision of the Voting Rights Act. So this is a requirement that legislative and congressional districts in Minnesota comply with U.S. constitutional requirements as well as the requirements of the Federal Voting Rights Act that's provided in federal law. Paragraph B in the subdivision requires that redistricting plans not have the intent or effect of dispersing or concentrating minority population in a manner that prevents minority communities from electing their candidates of choice. And when district plans are analyzed, again, as part of the data runs that come with a redistricting plan, you're able to see statistically where minority communities are spread out among different districts. Subdivision 7, starting in 2.17, relates to how minor civil divisions, so these are county, city, and township boundaries, are divided when districts are created. So the principle here is that the intent of districting plans is that counties, cities, and towns not be unduly divided unless required to meet equal population requirements or to form compact districts. And Subdivision H, starting on 2.26, provides that the principle of Minnesota districting is that districts should attempt to preserve identifiable communities of interest where that can be done in compliance with other principles that are contained in this bill. So a community of interest would be things like racial groups, ethnic groups, geographic interests, then other social or cultural interests. Subdivision 9, starting at the top of page 3, provides that districts must not be drawn for the purpose of protecting or defeating an incumbent. Subdivision 10 just is a technical principle that relates to the type of data that's used to actually create the districts, and this is the data that comes from the United States Census, and it's processed through our Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Office of Geographic Information Systems to be sure that the data is clean and accurate for use in Minnesota districting. Subdivision 11, again, relates to how districting plans are submitted to the through the legislative process, so they need to be processed through the LCC's GIS office before they can be introduced in the House or Senate. And then Subdivision 12 sets out the priority of the principles that are used when plans are created. So the way the principles are listed in this bill are in priority order, so you would start at the top of the bill and run towards the end through Subdivisions 1, through 9 for those principles, and you would give the highest priority to the nesting and equal population principle, and then as you go down through the bill, each of the successive principles would be prioritized after that. And Madam Chair, that's the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Representative Uglum.
Madam Chair, I would just have one comment. Sometimes I think principles could be maybe redirected to the term protections in this bill, which with all these inclusions. So thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Representative Johnson, may I ask you a question? So your map is, as a political geographer who is has a degree in GIS, this is gerrymandering at its best. But I'm just wondering, can you help me understand which Minnesota congressional district or House district you're saying is gerrymandered? Because I also have the map of that here. I didn't think about printing it out, but your question is one that brings that. This is us, and this is your examples. If you could maybe point out which one of our congressional districts is gerrymandered.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think the courts have drawn the maps for the state of Minnesota, and that's kind of the point, is that we don't want the partisan legislators to draw the maps. We're concerned that that's what would be the outcome.
Representative Nash?
I'm good.
Well, I'm going to follow up on that, Representative Johnson. So of the plans that were put in place for 2011 that was passed by the House and the Senate, which district was gerrymandered in that plan?
Here's the thing, Madam Chair. What we're talking about is setting up a commission that's independent of the legislature, rather than the legislators themselves, who have their own motivation and their own partisan interests drawing the maps. That's what this is about. And the testimony that we, or the description we heard about the principles, there's nothing necessarily wrong with the principles. But there's no political party identification involved in these principles. It doesn't address the issue that's in Section 1B that says that under no circumstance can some other commission, council, or panel draw the lines. That's the issue here.
But Representative Johnson, of the plan in 2011 that was passed by the legislature, what district was gerrymandered?
I don't have that plan in front of me.
Why would you call it that?
I don't have that plan in front of me, but again, the concern is, what are we going to do as we move forward? Do we want the legislature to draw its own plan and move forward with sort of lack of trust and partisanship that we've seen? Or do we want to look at the idea of having folks that do not have a vested interest who are taking a look at the big picture draw the maps. That's the concern we have.
Well, Representative Johnson, I would argue that if you can't even point to a district in the 2011 cycle that was passed by both the House and by the Senate as being gerrymandered, then what is the point of your amendment is my concern.
And I'm not sure that this concern is
not the future. Representative Johnson, let me finish, please. And I think the concern that I have overall with this amendment, and Representative Uglem hit it on the head, this bill contains principles that the legislature would be bound by to follow. And in every other cycle that we've done redistricting, the legislature has had to adopt principles, and we always had to hope that we would have principles. This actually puts it into statute that we have these principles in place, that any redistricting committee going forward has to make sure that they follow those principles, and they follow them in line with what we've done traditionally as well as what the courts have done traditionally, and make sure that gerrymandering doesn't happen. And I'll just give you an example. Though you can't provide me with a Minnesota example of gerrymandering, this is clearly gerrymandering. But when you look at the principles, and it talks about compactness and contiguity and keeping communities of interest together, that would not result in this at all. You would not have a district that looks like a snake or a U-shaped entity. That's the whole point of having the principles in place, is to prevent districts like this in Texas or Illinois, or somebody else had mentioned North Carolina. That wouldn't happen here in Minnesota because we would have this in statute. And though, Representative Johnson, you have expressed a concern of we need to adopt the plan of having this done by commissions. And that's why you want to remove this section of the law. But when you actually look at commissions, and I'll give you an example. So California, there's a article by ProPublica, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's a periodical. And they talk about they had access to Democrat emails where the California Democrats gathered to make sure that they got the districts that they wanted. And here's what it says in the article. The Citizens Commission had pledged to create districts based on testimony from the communities themselves, not from parties or statewide political players. To get around that, Democrats surreptitiously enlisted local voters, elected officials, labor unions, and community groups to testify in support of the configurations that coincided with the party's interests. This is in California where the commission exists. When they appeared before the commission, those groups identified themselves as ordinary Californians and did not disclose their ties to the party. One woman who purported to represent the Asian community of San Gabriel Valley was actually a lobbyist who grew up in rural Idaho and lives in Sacramento. California Democrats got much of what they wanted in the 2010 redistricting cycle, especially in the northern part of the state. So if you think that you're going to solve the problem, so to speak, by having a commission that's supposed to be nonpartisan, I would argue that is not the case at all. Having the principles in place puts requirements and parameters around how redistricting maps are made. And it also puts the responsibility on elected officials. And as somebody came up earlier and said, we can vote you in and we can vote you out. Yeah, you can. But a commission, you can't. They're not elected officials. Only this bill, with the accountability that we are all responsible, will get you that. So with that, I would ask that members vote against Representative Johnson's amendment. And you get the last word, Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we're talking about the future, not the past. And this is Minnesota. It's not California. Clearly, the best principle is one wherein there's some independence from the legislature who has its own partisan desires, needs to draw its own lines, to have the option, to have the ability for some commission not connected to the legislature draw its own line makes perfect sense and is, in fact, is the best way to go for our own state and for our own democracy.
Okay, Members, we're to take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Chair Anderson.
No.
Representative Nash.
Nope.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Detmer.
No.
Representative Fenton.
No.
Representative Flanagan.
Yes.
Representative Green. Representative Kunis-Podein.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Olmar.
Yes.
Representative Pugh.
No.
Representative Quam.
Nay.
Representative Uglum.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Ward.
Yes. The amendment A2 did not pass on a 7-9. Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You look like you wanted to speak, so. All right.
Well, I have a question for you whenever you're taking questions about the bill.
But. Okay. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is going to end up being a question or not. I appreciated Representative Uglum's reference to these principles as protections, and I think what we've heard from, certainly what I've heard from my constituents in emails and phone calls, and what we heard from the people who spoke today is that they don't feel, they don't understand, they don't know that the one section that they referred to, Section 1, Subdivision 1, Section B, gives them that protection. It's I haven't heard any other objections to the bill, but that is striking, that this is the particular portion that does not make them feel that their voices are being heard or that will be heard. And there aren't guarantees. If we leave it in the legislative hands or if we put it in a commission, things can happen. If we were to get elected out because of decisions that we made, that would happen every 2 years. The redistricting is once every 10 years, and so we would live with those consequences for a long time. I guess my question is, can't we set up a commission that has some accountability to it, that there would be reports made and hearings so that there could be some accountability to a commission that we would establish instead of leaving it in the legislative hands?
Well, just a couple of things, Representative Ward. So people understand, because I got a very clear feeling that people don't understand what Minnesota currently does. So we get the census data, in varies year to year. In the spring of the 1 year, whether it's 2011 or 2001 and so forth. And once we get that data, then we put together a plan, pass it off the legislature, hope that the governor signs it, governor doesn't sign it, and if the legislature, they can't come to an agreement, then it goes to the courts. And this doesn't change that at all. The courts still have the authority to draw the map if we don't agree as a legislative body. But I will tell you that a commission, as I mentioned in the article that I put to you, does not give any guarantee that it's going to be put together with a nonpartisan bent, that it's going to actually get more competitive districts. In fact, in one article I read, it said, and this was, I think it was the Mitchell Law Review, William Mitchell Law Review, it said that the competitiveness has been argued both ways, that the legislature puts together more competitive seats than a commission would. And so I believe that this is truly a constitutional responsibility and duty of each legislature. I believe that the U.S. Constitution defines it as a responsibility of each state legislature to put this plan together. And the good thing is that the people don't like it, they can vote us out. Or what has happened in Minnesota, they do go to court, too, if they don't like the plan as well. So we have some fail-safes in place just under our current system, which this is basically saying we're going to adopt our current system and keep this the way that we're doing it, except that we're going to adopt principles. And that was one of the recommendations in the law review. It said put the principles in place, and that will, you know, give us some continuity going forward. So. Representative Uglum.
To that point, you know, commissions are not perfect either. And this is a very, very difficult subject matter and everything else. But for one thing, I don't think it's really fair to compare Minnesota politics with the politics that we see out on the East Coast or even the West Coast and everything else. I think we've all had the opportunity, and we have friends and things where there are so many scandals out there on the East Coast and West Coast, and the gerrymandering that Representative Johnson showed on the federal congressional districts has happened for a long time out there, but it's really never happened here to any extent. And if you look at the district map, you can see that. I'm concerned. Everybody, you know, a citizens commission. Every time we hear that term, a citizens commission, everybody wants that. And it does sound really good. But unfortunately, sometimes citizens' commissions can change and not be truly independent. At least when the legislature is doing this, you the people, and one individual came up here and said, you're the boss. And the people are. They're our bosses, and we have accountability, and you can vote us out. This bill, I think with the protections that it has and everything else and the fact that the legislature has done this for many years, and when we haven't done it, the courts have stepped in. And the fact that the districts that we have right now certainly don't look like what we've seen in the map here, and the fact that this House, this body, changes hands, Democrats and Republicans, quite frequently, almost every other time, proves to you that these districts are indeed competitive and drawn in a responsible manner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just point out, and I'm not sure your response to it, but I know that this last election we had an independent, unelected board was created to shift the lawmakers' power to set their own pay, and the whole idea behind that was conflict of interest in terms of we as legislators setting our own pay. And her testimony to that effect, how do you see that as being different in terms of the conflict of interest?
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Representative Johnson, but I didn't support that constitutional amendment, and I argued against that on the House floor because I see, again, California is another example that went to a commission for legislative pay. And what you saw is they jacked up the pay for legislators significantly. And I see that as a burden on our taxpayers. And I would rather not have that money going towards padding our pockets. I'd rather have that money going to our schools, to our roads, and things that are important. And I think when you look at that in particular, I think that we're probably going to see the same thing here on Minnesota because it is a commission. And the thing of it is we have no control. So if the commission decides that they're going to increase our pay and we have a budget deficit, we have to increase our pay. And I find that really problematic.
To that point, Madam Chair, don't you think the 77% popular vote in support of the amendment suggests that there's a trust issue that's even more important than your own particular viewpoint on an issue, that there's some fundamental issues of democracy that underlie the importance of some of these issues?
Well, Representative Johnson, the very reason that I want to have this bill as having the legislature responsible for drawing the lines is because we are held accountable to the people. We get elected, hopefully, or booted out every 2 years. But a commission? No, you don't have that option. That commission is put in place, and you have no say over it. It's kind of like, look at the Met Council, folks. We've had a lot of problems with the Met Council. And now the people are saying we need to change the structure of the Met Council because it's not being held accountable. Or even, if you will, look at the bank stadium, the U.S. Bank Stadium. That's a commission as well. And so I think that we have some real concerns about taking this out of the hands of the legislature and having a commission that is not accountable to the people of Minnesota at all. And so that's why I would ask that you support this bill.
If I may, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the fundamental issue, more than anything, is the extent to which the public believes what we're doing is solid and trustworthy, and they have faith in our legislative process and our democracy. And the extent to which we take away from that is the extent to which we become less effective and are viewed as less trustworthy. And I think the way you have this bill written currently contributes to that.
Well, Representative Johnson, if we were to go under that, the legislature probably wouldn't exist here at all. We wouldn't be passing bonding bills. We wouldn't be passing tax bills. But we are accountable to the citizens that we represent. And if they don't like what they're doing, they can vote us out on all of those, just like they can vote us out on this as well. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for everyone that testified, if you think that Minnesota in recent history has had a problem with gerrymandering, please stand up. And at a recent... Thank you. And frankly, if you've been listening to the author of the last amendment and the discussion here, you'll find out that the recent redistricting was by the courts. So then you're saying a body outside the legislature, you think, is guilty of gerrymandering. And I submit that no matter what system that was taken up outside the legislature, that you have large members of the public. But you notice here, this is a public discourse that's open, and we're having this discussion. And it just proves that no matter who does the redistricting, the members of the public will have some concerns about gerrymandering. And so are we talking about trying to address a system, or are we talking about trying to address a symptom that might go beyond the state boundaries? So I think that maybe a lot of the consternation is from seeing that maybe you didn't see the maps, Texas and other states. Not one example could be brought up by anyone here of a Minnesota district that was gerrymandered in recent history. They couldn't. And so I think it's a perception, not a reality. Someone else said, we can't allow this bill to give the legislature, wait a minute, the Constitution has the duty of redistricting falling upon the legislature. So this bill, do you know what it does? It's trying to make the process better. We have engineers that testified that if you have design rules to prevent problems from happening, you do that in engineering, that's what this bill does. It sets guidelines for designing to prevent what you're scared of. And you heard what they were, and you know, having worked as an engineer on projects, but every time you had a problem, you had a rule to prevent you from doing that. So as redistricting is going on, we had history lesson, and it indicated how we improved. We took some rules that were done by the courts, took some rules, and tried to make the system better. And with the technology, it's even easier to do the design rules to prevent the fearsome gerrymandering from happening. And recent history... Let's say the turn of the century on, we've had two redistrictings, or two, well, 11 and one. But what happened is that we have had twice, well, actually it's more because, but there are two occasions where the first time we had this huge transition in the Senate. We've had the House transition multiple times since the turn of the century. So if the redistricting was non-competitive, you would not be seeing that. If you look at what the average tenure of members sitting in this chamber and the other chamber pre-2000 and now, it's dramatically shorter. We have the average person in the Senate, I think, could have been, a decade, 2 decades. It was quite a bit higher than it is now. If you look at the elections, they've been very energetic and competitive because you don't end up having 10, 12, or 20 new people. I came in with a batch of, we have, 33?
Representative Quam.
Okay. I digress. I think we have a problem with the symptom, but I think your bill is a cure.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, we've talked specifically about commissions or given examples, but this language is actually pretty broad in this section, and it says not delegate its duty to commission, council, panel, or other entity. So I feel like it really ties our hands at all by writing this in. And so I think, yeah, you're right that there's problematic ways in whatever way, but I think this really limits what our possible solutions are in the future. And so I just wanted to take a step back and just reflect on the bill language there just to highlight that. And also just make the comment, too, that if this wasn't contentious, I don't think this would be an issue to be removed. And so we're having a lot of conversations about this one specific section, and if it wasn't a threat in some way, it would be gone. That there must be some hang-up that we've had a lot of tension around this, because I agree, we haven't really heard anything about the principles. It's really been about this on both sides. So there is something there that we're hitting that I think is good, that we need to discuss, and it is problematic to me. And I also think the point about voted in or out, well put and well taken. But I think we also have the responsibility to listen to the voice of the people when we're not getting elected in or out. It's during the 2 years we're doing our jobs. And so the flood of emails, the people that have come today to testify, the way that if someone can pack a hearing room in greater Minnesota on an issue they care about, more power to them. If someone can turn out 500 people to something like you mentioned in California, whether that be friends or foes, I mean, that's a powerful statement for people to give up their time. And so I just want to say there's many ways we get to listen to the voice of the people in this job, just not just getting voted in or out. So I wanted to say that point and then also just reflect on that this language and its broad scope is problematic to have in there and what it limits.
Okay. And with that, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 314 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus state government finance bill. Members, I'd ask you for your you don't need to vote. We're not voting on this. This is going to be laid over. But I want you to think about what I've highlighted here today, that a commission does not solve the problem at all. The commission is just a way of having people surreptitiously corrupt our system, whereas having the legislature be the ones that are accountable to the people and that you have the option of saying whether you're going to keep them or not. So with that, Representative Johnson.
I thought the initial motion was to go to the floor.
No, that was for the severance package bill.
Okay, is that confident on that?
Yep. So with that, members, we're going to move to House File 433, Representative Joaquin. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Noise died down a little bit for a second. I'm Representative Cheryl Joaquim, and I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. And I've already had a long day today, so I'll make this really brief. Thank you for hearing House File 433. And I will simply put this, it's a bill that allows the Commissioner of Department of Revenue to study the viability of providing a free service to enable all individuals to file their Minnesota state income taxes online for free. The Department of Revenue would prepare a report that would include what system would cost, the vendor capability, security, and accessibility. Currently, Minnesotans pay a fee to file their state taxes online through a vendor unless they meet a certain income requirement. Since the majority of Minnesotans are filing their taxes electronically, I've had constituents contact me to ask why they weren't able to do this directly with the state without a fee and when they can file their federal ones without a fee. They also find filing electronically is quicker, easier, and leaves less room for error. The bill would give direction to the Department of Revenue to study how they would put this in place and come back to the legislature with a report by March 16th of 2018. The bill has an appropriation to do this task. Since this is a finance committee, I still haven't received a fiscal note on this bill, so I'm kind of going on the bill has, I'm going off a fiscal note that the bill received last year when I introduced this and had a hearing on it. I've received comments from constituents over the years, and that's why I decided to do this bill. Things like, I'm using software to prepare and print my Minnesota taxes returns this year, because as a retiree and a fixed income, I see no point in paying to file my return electronically using a commercial software. I would like to know why we can't fill out and submit our state return without having to pay. Another constituent, for taxpayers like me who file their federal income taxes return electronically for free directly with the IRS, it is currently impossible for me to file my Minnesota income tax return electronically unless I pay to do it. I believe this is very bad public policy and needs to be corrected. So I've received a lot of comments like that from constituents. And I was really happy that this bill was going to be heard again this year because it really fits in and is very timely with Representative Dave Baker, who's one of my co-authors, and Speaker Kurt Dowd recently launching a Select Committee on Technology and Responsive Government. One of the main purposes the Select Committee was created was to, quote, examine how Minnesotans interact with government and harness innovation to respond to the needs of the public. This is a need I've heard from the public, and I'm thankful for the bipartisan support for this bill that I have. And once again, like I said, sorry, I'm talking so fast, I want to make it in under time here. The bill simply directs the Department of Revenue to conduct a study and report back to the legislature about how to best meet the needs of our constituents in an area where we mandate them to do something, which is file and pay their taxes. So I'm going to turn it over to Terry Steenblatt, who's the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes from the Department of Revenue, to explain the approach and answer any other questions you may have, and I'm sure she'll keep it brief, too. And if Madam Chair, if you'd prefer to just go to questions, or would you like Ms. Steenblatt to give a quick few minutes?
Can you be brief?
Madam Chair, member, for the record, my name is Terry Steenblatt, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue. And I want to thank Representative Joachim for bringing this bill forward. Like you, we have also heard requests from taxpayers who are requesting free electronic solutions for filing their individual income taxes. We've researched what other states are doing in the area, and we've also listened to taxpayers. Taxpayers are telling us that they would like a free electronic solution that does more than allow them to fill in a PDF copy of their tax return and email it to us. They want a solution that works for all taxpayers and not just those who have a simple tax return to file. They want a solution that allows them to file easy and accurate the first time, and they want a solution that does not require them to go to multiple different places to file a return, one place for their federal, another place for their state return. And in order for us to successfully administer the tax system, at a minimum, the department needs a solution that would keep the return filing process linked to the IRS modernized electronic filing process known as MEF, maintains the security and the safety of taxpayer information, does not create an environment for filing of fraudulent tax returns, and keeps up with all the state and federal tax law changes so that taxpayers can file timely and accurate tax returns. And then finally, one that is easy for taxpayers to use, creating a more accurate return that reflects the tax benefits that taxpayers are entitled to. So this language allows us to do some research and recommend free electronic filing solutions including requesting information from consumer-based tax filing software vendors, and provide a report back to all of you that gives options and estimated costs associated with the option that could be exercised to allow taxpayers to file free in a way that is simple, effective, and meaningful, allows the department to successfully administer the tax system, and identifies costs associated with the free file solution. I'll stop there.
Okay. And Representative Joachim, I'm going to officially move House File 433 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, questions for Representative Joachim? Well, first I should say, is there anybody that wishes to testify on House File 433? Members, questions to House File 433? I do have some questions. So do Ms. Steenblok, we've discussed this in the past, do we have a ballpark figure of what the cost would be providing this to citizens on an ongoing basis?
Madam Chair, representatives, we do not. That's part of the reason why the study would allow us to examine the possibilities. It would allow us to issue an RFI to the private tax software vendors to get information from them as to what the potential costs may be.
And Representative Joachim, do you know if the vendors are supportive of this that currently provide this to citizens at all?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've talked to at least one person that represents a few vendors, and they have said they kind of remain neutral as long as they're included in the RFI process. This is something that some of them offer at varying different levels, but it's usually tied to income, whether or not you're a veteran, maybe if you're elderly and on a fixed income. And a lot of the when you go to their service to try to figure out if you qualify, a lot of times you have to start the process before you find out. And this would just be an easier way to go through the state. The state would just come back from a report with a report to see what that would cost. And it was important for me to do a report first. I did this with my first bill with the Silver Alert Working Group. I don't want to tell the state to do something and find out it's not the right way to go or it's more expensive. I would rather have the experts dig into this and look at it and find the best way to do it, instead of just saying, this is the way you're going to do it. So I really appreciate you considering doing this report.
Okay. Members, any questions at all? All right. Thank you, Representative Joachim. Ms. Steenblok, appreciate you coming today. This is being laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with that, members, we are adjourned.